All right, I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Natalia.
And this is Till Death Do Us Part.
Listening now to the episodes of My Favorite Murder.
Yeah.
The growth that they've had from like the very beginning when they were recording in like a living room and you could hear the trains rattling outside.
Yeah.
And we had Elvis was around. Like there's been like so like this whole now
so much has happened.
Mega stars. And at the end of the episode, I was listening to Monday's episode. They have like a whole thing at the end now where they have to say like, this was written by so-and-so and fact checked by this person and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like,
they roll credits.
Far cry from people who got yelled at for mispronouncing city name wrong, like all the time. So yeah.
Now they've got like producers and I wonder if they just walk in there now with like their sunglasses on, like smoking a cigarette, like, all right. You've got 10 minutes.
No. I think Giorgio gave up the vaping.
That's true.
And good on her, but definitely walking in with really expensive coffee. Definitely the big sunglasses. I hope they roll up in like the most comfortable sweatpants hoodie combo. Like fluffy slippers.
Fluffy slippers. Big round sunglasses. And they kind of have their hair in their face. Like, they don't want to look at anyone, but they want everyone to look at them at the same time.
100%. This is their life now. And they go in. So there's somebody to do everything. So they don't even pull the chair out when they sit. Like, somebody's there to, like, pull the chair in and out. Somebody adjusts their mics. They clip in. They have their genius sessions, and then they get up and leave, and people are just like, were they really here?
They're like, oh
yes. It's like a trail of glitter, like, oh my god, they must have walked through here, like the queen.
Did you see that? They were just here right before they arrive. Everyone's like freaking out. It's like in the Devil Wears Prada, right before, what is it,
Miranda
comes in and everyone's freaking out and they're like getting everything ready. That's what it's like.
Right, lines.
That's what it's like right before they arrive.
Oh yes, definitely. Is it? Hey, we're not even joking. Do you know there's a completely different vibe if you go over to the Crime Junkie Studios? All right, before Ashley Flowers walks in, it's different. They have somebody who's going and saging the space to clear out all the negative energy first. Lights get dimmed. Like, it has to be very quiet. There's, like, you could hear water fountains trickling. There's plants everywhere. It's, like, very, very quiet.
Yeah.
But she's more, like, leaving, like, flower petals in her wake where Karen and Georgia, it's crushed glass and broken dreams.
It's what I want, though. I aspire. Yes,
they are our rock stars. You know, like, this is what I wish when I was growing up, I could have had, like, a giant poster of these badass women up on my wall. That would have been... So with all of this, like, increase in activity, I was thinking to myself, when do we get our Stephen Ray Morris?
Like, I know.
Do you go to a shelter and adopt them? Oh, you know, adopt a Stephen?
I know.
Or is there like,
you
know,
you have to go to a universe?
Is there like a reputable dealer? Because I bet you there's a lot of junk Stevens out there that are just, they don't have.
Well, is it better to like adopt, don't shop?
That's what I'm thinking, but you know, if the universe would let me know where I can apply for that program, that is,
I would love a Steven with a mustache and one that also loves animals. That would be perfect for us, I think.
I mean I'm flexible on the mustache. not really flexible on the love of cats and dinosaurs. That's kind of That's a line. That's a definite
That's a hard
requirement.
line.
Yeah, a deal breaker. Like, just facts.
Exactly.
The right choice instead of Jonathan Taylor Thomas, that
Oh my God,
nobody
JTT.
knows who that is. Only we know who that is.
I was Andrew Keegan in JTT. That was my jam. I don't know what it was about Andrew Keegan, but like the dark hair, he was very cute.
No, I definitely went for like the all-American white bread look, like blonde, blue eye, like Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh yeah.
Oh, just stunning. The man still has aged very well. Talk about like a baby face. Either that or he has sold his soul for eternal youth.
Probably.
There's some celebrities that they look, I swear to God, the same.
I'm pouring out. This is how professional I am. I just poured out a vitamin water into my like Yeti cup. I have a
Sweet.
long way to go to Karen in Georgia. I
It's
have a
too tight.
question for you. I saw this on Instagram, and
Okay.
since you are a nurse and you work with a lot of women, obviously. The question was, do doctors and nurses like OBGYNs, do they even notice if you do exercises like Kegel exercises? Because when they do an exam, can they be like, oh my God, I noticed you've been doing exercises. Are you like ripped down there?
So to me, this is really a two-part question. You're asking if, number one, a physician or healthcare provider, because nowadays you can get your Pap smears and pelvic exams from nurse practitioners. You're asking if they're going to notice a di difference in your muscle tone from one visit to the next. That all is going to depend entirely on what kind of provider you have. Some people have really great providers, people like doctors that take their time with the patients and answer the questions. Like, you don't feel rushed. You don't feel like you're just a number that's flying through the office for them to like charge the insurance. Like, if you're at a drive-through GYN's office, they're not going to notice because the volume of patients that they have to care for in a day, in a week, in a month, in a year, there's just such volume and they're so overloaded, or they're shitty doctors and nurses and they're just not invested in their jobs. But like, no, they're not going to notice because maybe the last time they saw you was months ago or last year or 2 years ago. So like,
They're not
they're
gonna
going to look at the
remember.
chart. And kind of just that's why documentation is so important, because I don't care. And I know doctors and nurses, we tell ourselves all the time, like, we'll remember that later. No, you will not. You will not remember that later. You need to write it down. And this is why, if you went through the pockets of a nurse or doctor when they're on the floor, when they're working, their pockets are full of things like the alcohol swab packets with notes written on them. Because later we're
That's
gonna
so
empty our
funny.
pockets and be like, oh my God, yes, I remember. She told me she's taking that one new vitamin. I need to put that in her chart. Like those little things. But if you have a really invested doctor, maybe somebody who's known you for many years, or you guys just discussed this at a visit recently, that you were gonna work on improving your muscle tone so that you could have a better sex, or so that you could have better bladder control, or so for whatever reason that you're doing it, then yeah, that is something that they should notice if they're a good provider, because that's what the goal of you coming to see them, like that's part of your care plan. So from one time to the next, yeah, it is a measurable thing. They can see if the muscles are laying very like weak and flaccid, or if the muscles are like tight and clench up easily, like when you cough or on command. But no, they're not. But so, like, really, the other thing you're asking is, do they care if you have a very toned
Whoa.
hoo-ha? And
You've been
the answer to
weirded
that is
out.
not unless it's again, because we're working necessary. Towards a goal for you because of your health.
That is fair.
If it's not for your health, we are not just rolling up and being like, man, she's not hitting the Kegels 3 times a week. If you really want to see a tone down here, if you really want to get down a size.
Guys, come look at more this. Kegels. These are awesome.
No, in the same vein as they do not care if there's hair or if it's bald. Like, they do not care. As long as you're clean, this is the only thing that really matters.
That is good to know. I saw that on Facebook, or no, Instagram. And I was like, is that weird that I just thought of Natalia? Is that weird?
No, you'd be surprised. I still get the random message occasionally from people that I have not physically seen in years, just spoken with maybe very passingly on Facebook or Instagram. Maybe we went to school together 12 years ago, and they'll message me and be like, hey, can I ask you about this birth control I'm taking?
Oh my God.
No, I mean, not that you should be ashamed to talk about that stuff at all.
Of course not, yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, with no, not because you should be ashamed of the topic, but like, because you don't really know me anymore.
But
maybe I don't know what I'm talking about anymore, or maybe I would prefer for you to not tell me about your discharge. There's a lot of reasons.
You haven't been a patient ever.
Yeah, so I will get questions, and I think nurses in general will say that we get plagued by family members and friends who call us with whatever health related question they know we're like involved in.
It's always good to know, like, you know, my sister-in-law's best friend, who I've known of her since she was like a kid, but now she's like going to school to become a plastic surgeon. I told her outright, I'm like, you're my emergency contact. I don't give a shit. Like,
I trust you more than all of these other like, guys.
Yeah, I was like, I don't care. She's like, say no more, fam. I'm like, that's right. So, but no, of course. It should not be something to be embarrassed to talk about. I mean, half of us are women anyway. And so it'd be weird if you didn't talk about
it. Very, very much.
I just thought that was funny.
It is funny, but it's like, it's sort of like asking like this double-edged question, like, no, they don't care unless you've asked them to care.
That's
otherwise,
true.
It's one is much like the other.
Very good. Well, do you want to get into today's podcast? All right. Do you want to hear some goggles purring real quick?
Yes.
Can you hear it?
Absolutely.
He wants to be a part of the podcast.
I love that. He knows what he wants for himself, and he's setting his intention clearly. He's saying, he's like, this is for me. I need the spotlight.
Well, this is my time, goggles. Go away. I'm just kidding. Just kidding, buddy.
No, get out of here.
Alrighty, I'm ready when you are.
Okay. So today, we're going to take our passports. We are saying goodbye to Japan. And we are booking it over to Italy. Now, here in the States, I'm sure this is pretty much like standard. We're taught that Italy is recognizable because it looks like a boot.
Yes.
I will at times today be referring to places on the boot, places on the foot, to refer to the location of different cities. And I'm sorry if you did not learn that very ridiculous way of remembering what Italy looks like. But that's just how I'm going to refer to it. So
it's all good.
See that right now. Leonardo Cinciulli was born in southern Italy down by the ankle of the boot mm-hmm. on April 18th, 1893. She was born to a mother who hated her because she was the result of a rape. Her mother, Amelia, had been forced to marry her rapist to, quote, prevent the scandal of having a child out of wedlock. Leonarda's father was hardly around during her childhood, but when he was home, he beat her mother, Amelia. He would go into drunk rages and beat the shit out of her. He drank himself to death when Leonarda was very young. And although her mother put on the public face of the sad widow when they put him into the ground and they were the last ones to leave the cemetery, her mother lifted her veil and spit on his grave and told her daughter that man was a pig. So
good for her.
These are her role models.
Yeah, she was unfortunately as a child, because she was a constant reminder of that horrible memory to her mother, she was kind of seen as a burden because she was somewhat of a sickly child. She did have childhood epilepsy, but her mother was in a hellish marriage. Amelia, after her husband died, she did get remarried and ended up having more children, but it was obvious how much more she preferred her new family over Leonarda.
Very much and, like a Cinderella situation going on. Like, she sleeps in the dirt on the cold floor. All the rest of the family is laughing and eating regular food, enjoying company.
Yeah, everyone's having strawberry shortcake and Leonarda is like cleaning out the fireplace. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not fair, but as a child, she started to show and display like very depressive behavior and even had multiple suicide attempts. One time she tried to hang herself. Another time she tried to do it, but the rope broke. And another time she swallowed broken up glass, thinking that she would swallow it and bleed to death. But all of her attempts were just never successful.
Can't imagine how much that hurt.
As a child. I mean, she's a kid.
Oh.
Poor thing.
The poor thing. She was so alone and so neglected, so abused, that she thought this was a better thing to do, was kill herself. Very sad. In 1917, Leonarda married an office clerk named Raphael.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Raphael was a, quote, lowly office clerk, because he didn't have a high salary career, Leonarda was very attracted to the stability that he represented. I think he was a very...
there was no drama.
He's a very cool, calm, and collected dude, not easily rattled. Really, she was looking for someone to be a rock for her. And mm-hmm. this guy was a rock. It wasn't a shiny, pretty rock, but it was a nice, heavy rock. That's what she needed. Her mother was completely against this union. She had plans to marry Leonarda off to another man. I think I read that it was going to be like a business transaction. So... her mom's just pissed that she wasn't going to get more money for her daughter.
She wanted to be taken care of also. And that wasn't going to happen.
Right. She wanted her daughter to marry rich so that there'd be money to live off of for her.
Mm-hmm.
And on the day of their wedding, her mother yelled a curse on them as they were exiting the chapel. And this event would, for the rest of her life, haunt Leonarda. This event where her mother spits out venom loudly in public, basically condemning her to a terrible, unlucky life. This was a driving force in everything Leonarda went on to think and to do.
Yeah, she, I mean, how messed up is that? On your wedding day, your mom basically is like, I curse you and I curse your marriage. But it's messed up because, I mean, her family, and I think it's kind of a part of the culture, like they truly believe those things.
Right. So they definitely have a very superstitious belief system, especially in the more rural parts of Europe. And even though people are, diehard Catholics or diehard whatever they are, they also have practices and habits and little things that they've done their whole lives that are kind of like from their pagan backgrounds, but were brought in and are not considered to be like witchcraft. It's considered like, oh, that's just superstitious.
I don't know, it's like very old school. Like they're looking for an answer. It's not like they're like in the obviously Italians are very Catholic in religion and it says that they shouldn't be looking for, fortune tellers, but it's a kind of a part of the culture, I feel like, in
Yes.
during that time. So
Yes, very much.
it wasn't like they're just weirdos who curse each other. It was that's the area, that's the time period we're talking about. That was what people
Yes.
did when they're looking for guidance, for looking for certainty in a situation.
Yes, and they, so in instances like this, where her mother's yelling this curse at her, if she was into a strictly hardline Catholic belief system, she would tell herself, that's just nonsense words you're saying. Like, nobody can have power except for our God. You don't have any power over me. That's superstition. But how they have structured their beliefs into it, her mother can yell these curses and these curses have power, but to them it's all they're still Catholic in their minds. That's what I'm trying to get at. They don't see this as a breakaway from their religion, but they do place a lot of weight on it, which is funny. You would think if they were really going to be very hardcore religious that they would like poo-poo this and shake their heads and be like, stop being a silly rabbit. But no, it made them get into it even more. I once heard a guest star on a podcast, and she was a Wiccan, and she was saying that ex-Catholics make the best witches. She's like, because it's, she says, because the idea of ritual and sacred space is already built into Catholicism. Think about it. The mass used to not even be said in English, so you didn't even know what words were being said. That's how like protected it was.
Unless if you
And
spoke Latin, yeah, which no
right,
one does.
and the church is all gilded, gold, bright lights, lots of candles, incense. And the church just took all those things from pagan beliefs and cobbled it together how they wanted. But it's just very funny because when I was reading this story, I'm like, this is it. The Catholics are just very superstitious
We're
and they
very
don't
fancy pagans.
really, really, that's all it
We're pagans with a nice hat and some red shoes.
is. So for the rest of her life, this curse was what Leonarda saw all of her life experiences through that lens. Whenever something bad happened, it was confirmation bias. She was just self-affirming. She's, it must be because of the curse. It must be because of the curse. Instead of taking any kind of responsibility, she just took that very fatalistic view. And, oh, excuse me. I'm gonna burp all the time now, like Georgia. So, haunted by the curse, Leonarda visited a fortune teller who predicted that she would marry and have children, but that all of her children would die young. And this was the worst possible thing you could have said to Leonarda at this time in her life, because what she wanted above all else was to have a family and to be a good mother, to be different than what her mother had been. And so somebody telling her, you're going to have children, but you're going to lose them, this was horrifying to her.
Right.
So it's at this point in our in my research that from what I read, this is where she deviated from the run-of-the-mill superstition of, like, the village ladies and started actually researching into occult-specific literature and immersing herself in the Romani community, which was on, like, the outskirts of town. Mm-hmm. They didn't directly mingle in with, like, the downtown Italians.
Yeah.
So, but she was spending like a lot of time, and like this is when like people are starting to give her a little bit of a side eye when she's walking around. Like she's like now starting to sort of do things like a little too far for them into that zone, past where they're comfortable. But she was obsessed with this idea that she had to find out how to break her mother's curse. And if not break her mother's curse, then to find the best protective magic for her children.
Or change the course of it. Right. Do something. Yeah.
Right. Do something. She figured either I'm going to find a way to break it, or if I can't break it, I'm going to form a shield around my children and protect them until the curse, you know, wears off.
Right.
Sort of a weird idea to think that would work, but whatever, that was her reasoning.
Yeah.
And she learns how to read tarot. This is where she picks up all of her like little occult what she uses later on in business and in to impress others. This is when, or very very early in her life, she's picking all of this shit up, the tarot cards, you know, the horoscopes, the astrology, the elixirs for different afflictions, you know, making you, and I can make you a potion for someone to fall in love with you. I can make a potion for this, for that, for the other. And this is when she picks all of this information up. But everything that she can read and everybody that she talks to pretty much tells her there's nothing you could do about this curse. And a palm reader in that community actually told her that they saw prison in her hands.
Well, yeah, in your right hand, I see prison. In your left hand, I see a criminal asylum. And I wonder if the palm reader would end up, or if she would end up in the prison and all the children would die before her, or if this was a whole self-fulfilling prophecy where this whole thing started in her mind, like if this was like the seeds starting to grow. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So I wonder if this is where if it all kind of started.
I think so. I think that if you take the combination of her having this traumatic childhood where she feels so out of control of her own life, and when she finally comes into her own, when she finally, you know, matures into her adult self, she sort of takes back that power and says, like, I'm going to figure out how to use this to prevent what my mother put on me. But her mother didn't. The real curse wasn't what her mother yelled at her. The real curse was the years of abuse, so that even when they finally left and she didn't see her mother again, her mother's voice was going to always be there in her head, mocking her, telling her she wasn't good enough, telling her that she can't get away from her, you know, belittling her. Like, that's the real curse, is that voice that was going to follow her around the rest of her life. I don't believe she ever came out and called it witchcraft. You know, she continued to say that it was just, you know, an extension of the superstitions that the rest of the community had. But she was definitely doing more than her neighbors. Leonarda has this marriage and they flee the mother's home. And we think, okay, you've got a curse on you. The fortunes you're hearing haven't been great. But maybe now there's a fresh start. Maybe you can outrun it and get away. But it seems like she continues to have a very difficult life. She has a total of 17 pregnancies. 17.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of time in your life to be pregnant.
I don't have all the dates, but it's just heartbreak after heartbreak of having the child and having it die in childhood or very young, and understanding the time period. I mean, that did happen more often, that children did die under the age of 4 years old, but it still doesn't change the fact that it still is heartbreaking when that was her dream to have a big broad of a family and it's not happening. So,
or it's even worse. It's happening, but then it's happening and getting ripped away from her.
Ten times.
Yeah. Well, so that's the 10 children that were living, and at some point in their infancy or in toddlerhood died, 10 of them from some illness or SIDS, you know, something that babies would pass away from. And then she had 3 that were lost in miscarriage. And they don't say how far along she was in her pregnancies, but miscarriage at any time is traumatic.
It's still tragic, yeah.
It's a traumatic event, even if whether or not you knew you were pregnant or that you wanted a pregnancy, like all of a sudden you're having pain and you're bleeding this massive amount, you're scared. And if you did know you were pregnant and you were like counting on like it being a happy time, like for that to happen over and over and over, that's really sad.
So the loss of all the children just made her even more overprotective of the kids that she did have, which again just leads back to her with her elixirs and being overbearing with looking into the occult.
Yes, she was more and more anxious. Like with every passing year, you know,
I don't blame her.
Waiting for the shoe to, you know, waiting for the other shoe to drop, you know, like feeling as if at any minute another one of them could die. It's like every day that you have with them is like precious. So it literally drove her crazy. And yeah, it's kind of understandable how that happened. Like that would make a person crazy.
Yes, and so, and it did lead to even more seizures. So she did have epilepsy as a child, but I don't know. I mean, I'm no doctor, but sometimes it just, you do kind of grow out of it and it just stays in childhood. But I think these traumatic events did not just continue the seizures.
Yeah, it does seem like she has a particular seizure disorder where it's triggered by her anxiety. She would literally get herself so worked up in nervousness over her children that she would just roll into a seizure and pass out. And yeah, it seems like it continued to get worse and worse until they had this big move. All right, so let's see. So she's collapsing. She's having seizures. She's basically considered like an invalid. Like, her husband's very tolerant of the fact that, like, she can't really keep a job and she's not really doing much at home. And they're just kind of like tiptoeing around her at this time because she's so high strung. And they decide to move in 1921. They go further south towards the toe of the boot. I don't think I could have said that in a classier way. And when they did this fresh move, they did seem to get better. It was almost as if by distancing herself by like a really much larger distance away from her childhood
and her mother.
Yeah, and her mother's presence, that the better she could live her life.
Mm-hmm.
So she got better. She stopped having seizures all the time, and she was healthy enough that she was able to get a part-time job at a local bank.
In 1927, and I love that you found this part because I did find the aftermath, but I didn't find why it happened, and you found why, and I'm so excited. Mm-hmm. So during this time, she had stayed late at the bank one evening and created a fake account in the bank ledgers. The next day, when she came into work, the police were waiting for her, where she was arrested for fraud. She had spent 18 months in prison. And so when she was released, her marriage began to break down. So I did find in many different resources that she was arrested for fraud. And so, I mean, I can put two and two together. Someone like works at a bank, but I didn't know that she like created a fake account with bank ledgers. I don't know. I just think like, you shiesty old lady, like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
It seemed, it makes me wonder what other things she did to build up to this. Cause it seems like a very ballsy move to jump from no criminal history at all to, I'm going to create a fake bank account with fake money in it.
I'm sure sure she did other stuff to leading up to that point because they wouldn't just arrest her that day, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And get 18 months. So something happened, but regardless, she was released. And like I said, her marriage did begin to break down. I did hear different reports that her husband, he did start to become a little bit of a drinker during this time. And just because he had no more patience for her, eccentricities, because she was kind of, you know, a couple degrees off in a little area, a few areas. But Leonardo blamed him also for not providing a better life for their children. So they were just pointing the fingers at each other for their problems as each other. But the couple decided to move north again. And I believe, is this when there was the earthquake and why they moved? Or did they move?
No, so this is the move, then the earthquake, then there's another move.
Okay, so yeah, they bounced around quite a bit.
Yes.
So they did move, because I think just moving, they thought it would get rid of the problem, but that just moves the problem. But July 24th, 1930, there was a massive earthquake. Buildings, houses, they were destroyed. More than 1,400 people died. They were very fortunate enough that they didn't die. And with all of the curse talk and them thinking, you know, the curse is following them, I know it's tragic that you lost your house and your place of work and I'm sure friends and neighbors, but wouldn't you be like, the curse didn't get me, we're alive, we have each other, we have our things?
I think it's one of those things, it's like a grief response.
Yeah.
Or a trauma response.
Okay.
Where like some people following a tragedy will have survivor's guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else will be angry and will direct the anger like towards certain parties as a way of dealing with the fact that there was this tragedy. So yeah, you could, I'm sure there were people who were like, oh my God, we lost everything, but at least we have each other.
Right.
That was not Leonardo. Leonardo's
No.
like, fucking shit. Everything's gone and I'm stuck with all of you. And
The hell?
this, but it's okay. This
Yeah.
earthquake, she did eventually learn to acknowledge the earthquake as being a blessing,
Yeah.
not for the reason that they got to live,
Yeah.
nope, but because after the earthquake, when they move and start over, they actually start to prosper. She opens up a shop. They after the earthquake, the family moved all the way up to the tippy top of the bootleg to a place called Correggio. Correggio?
Sure.
Sure, we'll go with that one.
Correggio.
And
If you say it with
Correggio.
an if you say it with an Italian accent, it sounds right.
Correggio.
Yeah, see? It sounds
That's
right.
this is the logic now. So here she opens up a little shop, a little apothecary, very Schitt's Creek when
Yeah.
David opens his shop. Think that, but for
Rose gardens.
Leonardo in the
Yeah.
1930s. So beautiful, beautiful storefront. Lotions and soaps. She's actually very successful. She starts making a lot of money. I didn't find exact numbers. They sort of implied that she started making enough money that, like, the husband didn't have to work. She had some notoriety. People knew who she was. She was moving up that social ladder. And she starts rubbing elbows with all the rich
Yeah, the
upper
higher
class.
class citizens. Yep.
So she goes, breaks into that scene. She's loving it. This part of her life, this 10 years after the earthquake, are actually the best years she's ever going to have. At this time, all her children are small at home. They're in her control. They're healthy. Everybody, it's been years since somebody has died. So she's a little more relaxed. She's got money. She's got new friends. She's living her best life. She becomes an artiste,
Yeah.
right?
She starts writing poetry during this time, and all of the learning, and I don't know if it was like training, but all of her research and practicing that she did kind of with the occult. But she started telling fortunes too for a little extra money in her shop. So she learned very quickly that the customers that she had, like the higher end patrons of the store, that if she just told them what they wanted to hear, they would give her more money. And this is how she earned their trust, which, I mean, it makes sense, you know?
Listen to me. So the America that I grew up with had the slogan, the customer is always right.
But
And
I
that
mean,
was accepted, okay, as universal law in the United States up until very recently.
yes.
Okay, now nobody's right. For
Ugh.
a very long time, that was the mentality.
The
So
customer is always right.
she was one of the OGs of this value system,
Yeah.
was the customer, I'm going to give the customer exactly what they want. They're not here for the truth. They're
Yeah.
here to feel better.
They want to walk out the
So,
door feeling better than what they walked in, and they'll
yes.
come back.
Yes.
So,
So it's just a good business model. I'm saying.
it
Just he just was very clever in a business sense about how to brand herself and how to grow her business. She did very well at this time.
She also had seen a fortune teller herself, and the person had told her that the only way for, because she had become pregnant again in 1934, and she was very, very understanding. She was scared and stressed, so she did see a fortune teller, and she said the only way for you to make sure your fourth child will be born and live is if you sell your soul to the devil. So she does. This is a turning point, I think. This is when, because her fourth child, for all intents and purposes, ends up being a very healthy child. So she thinks she needs to pay her dues in a way. And like you said, she could not outrun the curse. It was her obsession. Her mother's words were driving her family apart, but she needed to also believe that she needed to either break the curse or do whatever she can to make sure her children will live and her life will, she can keep what she has made for herself in what she's done so far.
Yes, she very much has bought into this system in her mind of, you know, if you take one, you give one, everything has to balance. Mm-hmm. So in her mind, it made sense that she would have to sell her soul. That's how powerful she wanted the protection to be that she was trading it in for. And in her mind, she rationalized all of that coming back to this curse my mother put on me.
Yes. And then in 1939, so Giuseppe is the oldest son, and he wanted to get away. He's at the age where he can kind of find himself, get out on his own. And he's also at the age where he sees his mom as overbearing. So he wants to join the army. It's 1939. It's World War II is happening. And he joins without telling her. She discovers what he did. And so it was in a certain time. So when Leonardo found out that her boy was like her son, her firstborn, was going to be sent away to fight in a war, she was like consumed with fear that he was going to die in this war, because everyone knows what happened in World War I. That was a complete disaster. So
yeah, well, and I read that she also had a realistic viewpoint, and she knew that Giuseppe was a pretty mama's boy.
Mm-hmm.
Because she said at some point, he's not going to survive the war. He's never even survived a fist fight. So she knew that he was like a weakling. Or that sounds terrible. She knew
he was a wimp.
She understood that her son was not a fighter.
You know, and that some people belong in the mailroom. That's fine,
right? Everyone has a place.
That's true.
But she recognized his place was not on the field with a gun. He was going to be afraid, and he was going to freeze up, and it was going to be the death of him. Mm-hmm. So yes, she became. Just, this is beyond obsessed. This is now like a psychotic break. The only thing she can think about at all is this idea that she has to prevent his death. And she starts reading through everything she has and asking questions in shady corners. But I'm guessing that probably a lot of spell books don't tell you about the ins and outs and the specificities.
Yeah.
Of human sacrifice. So I'm guessing she had a hard time trying to figure this recipe out. She goes through quite a few people trying to get it right. So her first customer was what in today's age we would consider a young female. I think they said she was like in her early 20s. Back in the day in Italy, that was considered like you're becoming a spinster. Like if you're not married by 18, every year that ticks after that is like you're spoiling goods.
Right.
So this young woman who feels desperate to hurry up and get married ASAP is constantly going to Leonardo trying to get spells to like attract a man.
Mm-hmm.
So Leonardo comes up with this story that, oh, I have found you the perfect man and he's going to be your husband, but this is a big secret. And for the magic to work, for him really to be in love with you and be your forever person, you have to do exactly what I say. You need to give me all your money.
Yeah.
I don't know how she said that without cracking up. Like, that's as far as I would have gotten at the con. Like, sorry, I can't. I'm a terrible salesman. I can't. I'd be just laughing. She's like, give me all your money. Of your possessions, all of your best jewelry.
Yes.
And all of your money, and you're gonna pack your bags as if you're moving away forever.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to write a letter to your family. Write a couple of them. Don't worry, stamps on them. I will mail them to your family.
Yes.
And you're going to come here in the middle of the night to this other town. You're going to meet this love of your life. You're going to live happily ever after. And this poor girl, Faustina Setti.
So Leonardo told Faustina, like you said, bring all your money. And I found out how much she brought. It was 17,000 lira. And I was like, how much is 17,000 lira? Like, that sounded like a lot to me. I looked it up. It's nothing. It's like, in today's money, 17,000 lira is $10 in US money. But back then, it was like $100 to $200. So that was like her life savings as like an 18-year-old girl. She was like, this is everything I have. She told her family goodbye. She packed up. She brought the letters to Leonardo. She showed up in the middle of the night, I'm sure, and was like, all right, I'm ready.
Yeah. And I just want to say, I feel like this is common in every country's currency. I don't know if you've had to like do exchange in a lot of other countries, mm-hmm. but it always feels like to me in any country, one American dollar is hundreds or thousands of their dollar. Do you know what I'm saying? Like if it's one US dollar,
it's 100 yen million or something. Pesos.
It's not yes. like one peso, $1. It's not even 10 pesos, $1. No, it's like 50 million pesos, $1. Every country is like this weird, you're right. You're like, oh, 17,000 lira. That's shit.
No, I was like, oh, shit. Yeah. It's
barely anything. it still was a lot to them.
It was a lot to them. And it was a girl who probably had only been out of school for a long time, never worked. And was honestly just like looking for a husband. Like that's all the money she had in the world. And so she just felt like, oh God.
Still be like living at her parents' house. She didn't feel useful. She felt like she was missing out on her shot in life. She like didn't understand why it wasn't happening for her.
So, let me tell you, Faustina, you're fine. You're not missing anything.
Right? Faustina, right now is the best time to travel.
Right?
Because right now you're free as a fucking bird. Go see the world. Bags are packed.
Just keep going.
But we have to remember that even if she was free to travel like that, think about you would never have been caught dead traveling alone as a woman, like out on the open road like that. Like you would be pulled over and arrested or something. They'd burn you as a witch.
Right? Yeah, you would be like a whore. Yeah. You whore.
You know, just thinking before is that chance on October 3rd to post anything.
Boo, about you whore.
Mean Girls. And I was like, oh, damn it. Like, what? You know why? Because I didn't set an alarm, Stephanie.
Damn it.
This is why it happened.
So, that's okay. All right. Well,
poor Faustina.
Poor Faustina.
In the middle of the night with her bright eyes ready to go and meet the love of her life. She comes in. Leonardo's like, well, take a load off your feet. I'm going to pour you some wine. Faustina's like, no, I'm cool. It's a long journey. I don't want to be drunk or anything. Mm-hmm. And Leonardo's like, no, bitch.
Drink it.
Sit down and drink this or the spell's not going to work. Like, shut the fuck up. Drink this. Okay, so Faustina takes it and drinks it and doesn't realize it's been laced with herbs that are going to paralyze her. It's too bad that the herbs didn't outright kill her.
No, it just paralyzed her. So yeah. She kind of knew what was going on. She was just like frozen and she falls to the floor, unable to move or scream or do anything. And that's when Leonardo raises an axe into the air and Faustina is chopped into pieces, placed into pots of water with chemicals to make soap. And she's basically quartered to make apothecary items.
So when I originally started the research on Leonardo, they really highlight the soap making aspect, but she used the body for lots of things.
I can't imagine all these things. Like, she had this already down to a science. She, in this, during this time period, of course, it was like World War II. So there was rationing going on. So things like flour or sugar could have been in short, like you couldn't get it as easily. So she used Faustina and used parts of the body to make those things to make other things. So she was putting her in the oven and chopping her up to mix it with other flour, sugar, chocolate, milk, and eggs.
I was really surprised at her culinary use of the blood.
Yeah.
as someone who does enjoy a good episode of MasterChef or Iron Chef, like, I could tell you, she's very creative. She dehydrates the blood to make it into a powdered form. That's some chemical advanced shit for some woman in the 1930s in like a little kitchen, like probably a little wood burning stove. She doesn't have
fancy fucking Betty Crocker
steel shit. No. So she makes the blood into powder and then from that powder into cakes.
Yeah. And she mixes it up. She boils down the different meats and makes like meat pies. She like debones things and mention it later in the kind of towards the end, but she basically gets it all down, cuts it. I don't know like the proper like terms to use, but she cleans it all up herself is what I'm trying to say.
Yes,
in the nicest way possible.
Does a damn fine job, apparently. Like, mm-hmm. Not a speck of blood to be seen.
Which is weird, but go on.
Yes, well, I guess because she really treated the body as physical ingredients with, like, dietary properties, you know, fat, protein, starch, sugar, and balanced out the recipes. Like, just she knew instinctively what was going to work. And that's just a skill that you're going to be, like, nobody's going to teach you that. She was just a boss in the kitchen.
Yeah, so she made these small cakes and tea cakes, and she made Giuseppe eat several of the small cakes, believing that they were he was eating up his protection. Like, that's what happened. That's what happened. Okay, I'm just reporting.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to me, this whole story is such like. I see it as this dramatic movie in black and white.
Yeah.
I can just see her standing over him at the kitchen table. And
me too.
Like, him, and she's like, he literally has just rolled out of bed. He's barely awake. And she's like, eat this right now.
I know.
He's just like, he's
and she's like a man. Crazed.
He's a young man. He's embarrassed to be still living at home with his mom. Like, his mommy's trying to feed him, and he's like, no, I'm not really hungry. And she's like, eat the fucking cake.
Yeah.
Apparently she forced him to eat half the tray before, like, she let him leave the table.
Oh, my God. But she also, she would sell these cakes in her shop. She would share some of the cakes with friends over tea.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what? The fuck was in that tea? I don't trust anything this woman does now. Mm-mm.
I bet you her tea time was probably so bougie. Like the nicest teacup sets you've ever seen. Like real porcelain. Everything.
Yep. Yeah.
They had the fancy little tongs for the sugar cubes.
Yeah.
So she was probably serving some like bomb espresso, some like high quality tea leaf shit. I'm sure it was delicious. But
what's
although
your secret the cakes, ingredient? I just can't put my finger on it.
I cannot tell anyone. It's a family recipe.
It's new.
But although the tea cakes turned out all right, the soap was shit. Literally looked and smelled like shit.
That's
it was
so
like
weird.
This brown goop. Clearly, yeah. That equation was not balanced right. It was unusable. So they dumped that, and she realized she was going to have to try again because she couldn't just have the tea cakes. And now, anyway, all the tea cakes were gone. She's going to need fresh tea cakes. She needed to be able to make the soap because, in her mind, Giuseppe needed to ingest the spell. Hence the tea cakes. That way he had protection literally from the inside out. And then the soap to physically cover him.
Like an external protection.
Yeah.
Right.
Like putting on.
Inside, outside.
Yeah. Like him going, I feel like it was him going into a Spider-Man costume. Like it's super tight to the body.
Yeah.
Transform. So. She knew she was going to have to try again. And she picks her next victim, who is sort of the other end of the spectrum in the community, Francesca Soavi. And she really was a spinster. Like at this point, nobody was going to marry her. She was like 30. It's way too old to expect to meet somebody at 30. Nope. So for a woman in her position, the best thing you could hope for was to be able to get a job so that at least you wouldn't be a burden on your parents, who you would still have to live with, because the only way you move out of your parents' house is if you get married.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to at least not be a burden on your parents, you would hope to get a job. And a lot of times for a single woman.
It would be like a job as a teacher.
A teaching job.
Yeah.
Yep. Babysitting. So Francesca's looking for that opportunity, and they're not so easy to come by. And Leonardo tells her, I found the job for you. There's a private school in this other town. They're waiting for you. I just need you to come here in the night. Again, bring all of your money and personal possessions and letters letting your family know that you have gone to teach at this school and that you are fine forever. Goodbye. Francesca says, no problem. Francesca comes back again. Leonardo with the wine, have a cup. Francesca, no, thank you. I don't drink anymore. Mm-mm. Leonardo makes her drink it anyway. And again, victim is paralyzed, and Leonardo chops her up with an axe. Now this time she notices that the goop is a little better of a quality. And she realizes from a chemical perspective, it's because Francesca had a thicker fat layer under her
skin. She was bigger.
Yeah. Whereas Faustina had been what she considered to be skin and bones. She didn't have any like fat on her. Didn't make a good soap. So this made a better soap, but it still wasn't good enough. She still was missing something. She knew she was going to have to kill again.
Yeah. She... This is just so weird. But when she made the soap, she also made candles. And when families were looking for Francesca, they were just like, hey, you're one of the people who had last seen her. Have you heard anything? Blah, blah, blah. She was like, no, but here, I have this shop. Here's some soap. And she kind of like sent them on their way. Like, what the fuck? Like,
here's a party favor. I just have some extra. No, please.
She is always with you.
Take this soap that I've made out of your loved one. Ugh. Thank you. Yeah, really, really wicked is what it is. Because it has this element of, I want to say playfulness. I know that sounds bad, but almost of being
like, it was like a little cheeky.
Mischievous, like naughty, like wink, wink. She's like, okay, can everybody please stop talking about Francesca? That's over with. I'm moving on to greener pastures. I know what I need now. She's been thinking about it, and it comes to her in the night. I have had women who are young. I've had a woman who's older but physically more sturdy. She's like, but both of them had sad little lives.
Yeah.
They were not famous enough. They didn't have the X factor.
Yeah, she promised her, she was like, all right, Virginia, come to me. I'll bring some like 50,000 lira, which was like maybe $1,000 equivalent. And so she brings that and some jewelry. It was September 30th, 1940. So she came to see Leonardo.
She said, I've got a job for you.
Yeah.
Because Virginia Cassiopo.
Yeah.
Okay. Virginia had a kind of a successful start to a singing career in the opera.
Right.
And she was sort of in between gigs. She was kind of nervous about when she would get her next job, or if she was falling out of favor, you know, quickly, like, is my 15 minutes over? And so she was feeling this anxiety, and Leonardo's like, I know.
Oh,
what
she's
to do.
Like, I got you. I have a job set up
girl,
for you.
Girl, boo boo, I am always on your team. Look what I have for you right here, a job with a rich aristocrat who's like a patron of artists. You're going to go, you're going to be his, quote, secretary, wink, wink. Okay, yeah, you were sending her to be a fuck toy anyway. But you're going to go, you're going to be his secretary, so you're going to be back in, immersed in that world of artists, and that is going to secure your future. That's how you're going to get back into business.
Yes.
And Virginia's like, yes.
She's like, nailed it.
For me. That's what I want.
So,
same dance, guys. Get your valuables. Get a letter for your family. Come in the middle of the night. Come in, sit down. Have some wine. Pass out. Chop, chop.
Yes. And this is where Leonardo really fucks up, because Virginia was a little, even though she wasn't like super duper famous, she was well known enough. And she went a little crazy with the spending. She gave away some of the jewelry to friends. And even though Leonardo had this successful business, I mean, it's kind of like it's the equivalent of like when your neighbor just comes home with a Lamborghini and it's like, whoa, what's Dave doing? I know Dave doesn't do anything that would equate to a Lamborghini, so what the hell is he doing? So it was kind of like that, like, what the hell are they doing? So she did go a little crazy, but she was finally comfortable income. She was, but doing this was bringing extra attention.
But we have to talk about what made her the happiest thing of all.
What?
The thing that made her happiest of all is that when she killed Virginia, Virginia made the perfect duo of soap and tea cakes.
Yeah.
And Leonarda, in her confession, said, quote, "She ended up in the pot like the other two. Her flesh was fat and white. When it had melted, I added a bottle of cologne. And after a long time on the boil, I was able to make some most acceptable creamy soap. I gave bars to neighbors and acquaintances. The cakes, too, were better. That woman was really sweet."
Oh, my God. I can just imagine her being like, she was really sweet. Like,
again, with, like, the devilish grin on her face. She,
Leonarda.
She was owning it.
Mm-hmm. Owning it. She knew. Yeah, I wrote, if she were to make anything out of me, I promise you I would not taste good. I would taste like mac and cheese.
But I love mac and cheese. But I love even like Kraft mac and cheese.
But tea cakes, fuck a tea cake. I don't even know what they are.
What is a tea cake?
Like a tiny cake? Like a cupcake? So
in my mind, I think of like a mini cake, something that's like sort of like in one of those mini muffin tins, but it's not a muffin, some kind of.
Like a little cake. Dessert, like a little cutesy.
But wouldn't that just be a mini cupcake if you think about it? Because it's still cake batter.
It just like, came what full makes circle. It
a tea? Is it a cake? If you serve it with tea, it becomes a tea cake, no matter what kind of cake it is. You can get all sorts of wild combinations.
I mean, I guess. I mean, but at the end of the day, if you put it in a tortilla, it becomes a taco.
That would be the best ending ever of every day.
It's a dessert.
Yes, that would be delicious. I love it. Tacos. Leonarda had made this mistake of picking off somebody that everybody was going to notice is missing. Somebody who's known to go around to all these houses during the day, tea parties, invitations to dinners. This is that aristocrat lifestyle. And all of a sudden, it's like, if Paris Hilton just was gone one day, like somebody had knocked on her door and nobody answered.
Mm-hmm.
It just, boom, gone, a celebrity. Of course, people were going to notice. Somebody had spotted the victims coming to her house in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't know why. But now that the police are asking, maybe they want to look into that.
And then side eye
to Leonarda's house. And they're pointing their fingers. That go that way.
So yeah, they go to the witchy woman, the woman who's doing fortunes, telling fortunes, has bad kind girl. Of like the apothecary. They go to her house and they actually arrest Giuseppe. Because they couldn't actually fathom a woman be capable of such things. But
a woman killer?
Yeah, stop unheard
it,
of.
Stephanie, stop it. We just can't stop do it. That.
That's not ladylike. Leonarda, so she goes into the police station and she comes clean. She explains her guilt and she tells them everything. Just so they will release her beloved son, her number one sunshine boy, Giuseppe.
Yeah. So apparently she burst in to like the interrogation room Like when she went into the first part of the police station and she's telling them, like, I need to talk to someone right now. I committed a crime. They were like laughing at her and telling her to take a seat on the bench. And she's like, you don't understand. I need to talk to someone right now. She's like super panicking because she thinks they're going to throw her son in prison forever if she doesn't speak to someone like right this fucking second. And they're not listening to her. So she basically like runs past the blockade and like bursts into the interrogation room and is like, oh, I did it. And even at that point, they're like, calm down. You're just saying this because you're trying to cover for your son. But, you know, it wasn't really you. And that's when, with a dead face, she tells them, I'm going to tell you exactly how I took care of those bodies. Minute for minute, I'm going to tell you every detail, and that's how you're going to know it's me.
And
that's why she went into such great detail about her killings.
Her confession.
Because she had to prove that she was really the killer. Because even at that point, they didn't want to believe it would be a woman.
Yeah.
I just think that's fascinating. Like, I have to tell you how evil I am, still not have a penis. Surprise.
Surprise. In 1946, she was tried for the murders, and she did not care because she, in her mind, was doing what was right. She spoke out on exactly what would happen, and if anyone had said, and then you put the oven at 375, she would be like, no, the oven was at 350. Like, she did not let anyone get anything incorrect. She was very to the point.
From what I was reading, at times the prosecutor, when they were speaking, would try to gloss over the more gory details so as not to, because it was considered so improper to discuss and say certain words out loud. It was considered so impolite. And she would like stop and correct them while she was on the stand with like, just so that she could tell them the gory, dirty details. This is like, anybody can do this. Even me, a woman, I can do this too.
She even went into, so they were like, how did you do this by yourself in the middle of the night and you were done by the morning? So she proved to them, they brought her to a morgue and they had a body, and she explained, she didn't go through the entire process, but she explained in detail how she did everything and how her son had nothing to do with it.
That was the account that I read, was they gave her an actual axe. They gave her a corpse and they said, show us. And she got as far as getting a whole arm off that apparently she chopped it and it was dangling by like a tendon. And she, with her bare hands, like ripped the rest of that bone off. So she was like a savage butcher. And at that point, they were probably like throwing up in their fucking handkerchiefs.
Like, they're okay, like, okay. And because they were just like, Giuseppe had to have done something. And she was like, I swear to God, he maybe mailed a letter, but the only thing he did was, he didn't even know that he did. Like, he maybe he got rid of the bones. Like, she would wrap them up in paper, like a sack or something, and she would say, go take out the trash or whatever, go throw this in the river, and he would just like go
Which
do it.
Which would be something that she would tell him to do anyway, is take out the trash. It just happens that in taking out this particular trash, you were
there
taking
would
out
be,
human remains.
Exactly. He had no idea.
Yeah.
None.
And he said he was very used to her experimenting with different chemicals in the home to come up with new products for the store. So it was not uncommon for her to make a batch of something that just smelt like shit or looked like shit, and she would say, go dump this pot outside. He didn't know he was dumping human remains. He just thought he was dumping out another batch of bad soap
or whatever.
So she's up there, and she even goes so far as to tell them when she was finished with the murders, she donated her cooking utensils to the war effort.
Like, oh, wow. She basically just got rid of evidence. Which,
but,
if she even knew about
very,
it.
Yeah, but another very, like, fuck you statement. Like,
yeah.
I guess, you know, I did this thing and all the evidence is gone, but I'm proud of it because I donated it to my country.
Right. She was diagnosed as manic and spent 30 years in prison. So that was her sentencing. Mm-hmm. So it was both because they diagnosed her as manic, but I don't know if it really had anything to do with anything.
No, I think that at this particular time in history, that was a common label for any woman that didn't behave in a way that society.
Yeah.
The court says, okay, now that you've chopped a body up, we believe you. You're guilty. They sentence her to 30 years in prison. And then she was to follow that up with 3 years in a criminal asylum.
And she died in 1970 of cerebral apoplexy. So she had a stroke. And I wanted to know, I did not find it, but if she was able to outlive her children, because that would fulfill the prophecy if she did or did not outlive her children, you know?
I also could not find out if the curse played out or if it didn't, which would be very interesting to see if the curse did not play out and all of her children are still alive, then, you know, what is your excuse? What do you have to say for yourself?
Yeah. I wonder if anyone knows, if that would be a cool discussion to have, or if anyone has any resources, they could let us know, because we have Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and everything. So definitely let us know what you think.
Hey everyone, I wanted to jump on here real quick and let everyone know how they can get a hold of us. Of course, we are on all social media channels. We're on TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. If you want to send us a message, Till Death Do Us Part podcast@gmail.com. And we're much more active on Instagram, Till Death Do Us Part podcast. If you have sent us a message and we haven't either responded or heard back from us, do not feel bad. It is not your fault. It's Natalia's fault. And with that being said, definitely like, follow, subscribe, review, share, all those fun things. See you later.
We're gonna have to find out more legitimately about this crime con. I need to find out now, like, what are tickets running to Vegas for now? I don't know. I haven't been to Vegas in so long.
I haven't been in years.
Me neither. I haven't been since we were at the attorney con.
That's hilarious.
which was like I want to say like 8 years ago, something like that, like a long time. Becca was still very little. So mm-hmm. It must have been like 8-10 years ago was the last time I was there. So I don't know what their protocol is now. Are they even open now with COVID? Like, I think they're open, but I don't know what that means. I say open with quotes, because what does open mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how often are they cleaning off those slot machines when we're walking through? You
know? We could get matching hazmat suits that look like...
Like, do you watch Stranger Things?
Yeah.
So we can be like those suits, like government issued.
Yeah, when they go into the beyond or wherever that place is.
To the upside down.
The upside down. Yeah. And
absolutely.
And we'll be connected with like a big hose. So if we lose each other, I can just like pull on the hose and I'll find you again and be like, oh, I thought I lost you.
Yeah, I mean, we're working on a limited budget, so I'd love to say that they're going to be real hazmat suits. They might just be hazmat Halloween costumes from Party City. Like, they don't actually seal out any type of microbe at all. They just make your mask foggy.
Yeah, right.
But we will spray paint like our podcast name on it, and then we could
Exactly.
sell but we could sell that off later as like unique merch.
Yeah.
They'll put that in the museum. Like a famous
Exactly.
podcaster once walk through Vegas with this hazmat suit. Like I want to say the last time I was in Vegas, I was fascinated by they had on display a pair of Michael Jackson's shoes.
Oh yeah.
And
I hope they put our suits next to it. It's like Elvis's cape, Michael Jackson's shoes, and our like spirit Halloween hazmat suits.
Right next to that. And then the ruby slippers.
Yeah, and Steven's mustache. Oh.